Blog Talk Radio.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to ride. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crying in the streets. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it! My life has value!
I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
And we're off. It's a very special edition of the LCS Hockey Radio Show today. As it's an impromptu Saturday show. We're going to have Evan Long on, and... let's check to see if our buddy Mike Dell is there. Mike Dell, are you there?
Larry, I'm here.
What's up, man?
Hey, not much. Yeah, because last week on the show, or just a couple days ago there, we did a segment on Columbine and
yeah.
The shooting there and what's the true story behind it. And I told everybody about a guy doing the research named Evan Long and that he made a movie, The Columbine Cause, and he has a great website there, thecolumbinecause.tk, and it's an important issue, and we've already gotten a lot of response about it. So we wanted to have Evan on. And to get to the the bottom of this whole story, you know, real in depth, and so he should be here any minute.
Yeah, yeah. I'm interested to hear what he has to say because I think like a lot of people, I had no idea any of this was going on until when we did the segment Wednesday night, and this was all like breaking news to me. You know, I just accepted the official story. I took it for for face value, and I never thought another thing about it. But obviously. Some shenanigans going on.
Yeah, the timing of the attack, it was back in April 20th, 1999, and the official story like didn't jive with a lot of people. They said, hey, that doesn't work. But then they didn't release documents until right after 9/11. So by then, Columbine was off the radar. No one was thinking about it, and it kind of got pushed to the back, and it's been neglected ever since. But thanks to guys like Evan Long and some other guys doing research, we know that what we were told is not really what happened.
So. Yeah, well, that seems to be the case with almost everything anymore.
Yes, that would seem to be the case. Now, if Evan doesn't show up, we're just going to sit here quietly.
All right, fair enough.
But you were just able to watch the movie this afternoon, Larry, right?
Yes, I did watch it this afternoon. Yeah, I got a viewing of it in. About 2 o'clock, I watched it, and I was really intrigued by it, fascinated, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, because the great thing about the movie is Evan gets right to the official police reports, and the official documents, and he shows them to you right there. They're pictured, and you can see where like names are blacked out and stuff, and because those names are eyewitnesses who are giving identifying other shooters. By some 8 to 10 shooters were involved.
Yeah.
Probably.
I think for whatever reason, they're all name redacted. I don't know.
Yeah,
they're all
odd,
name redacted. Yeah.
Large family. So, but what else are they going to say there, Larry? About what else is going on, Larry?
Well, I think our guest is here, Mike.
Oh, there we go. This will be good.
Guest is here. Well, let's welcome to the show from the ColumbineCause.tk, Evan Long. Evan, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Although we are hearing an echo. Yeah.
Oh, you are.
Yeah. You may have to turn down your fake radio machine.
Okay.
Are you using Skype? Is that the thing?
I am using Skype. So it's on a speaker. Let me see what I can do. Try turning that down. Is that any better?
I don't hear an echo anymore.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay.
All right, we're good. Yeah, this Skype, all this technology, we're simple cavemen. We don't know how to work it, but
no.
All right, well, Evan, thank you so much for coming on the big show, and but more importantly, thank you for spreading the truth about what's going on there in Columbine. Now, why don't we start out by just telling the people a little bit more about yourself and how you got involved with this issue?
Sure. Well, basically, what happened was. You know, I I had kind of read some alternative information about American politics and things in the 90s, you know, a little bit about the JFK assassination. When 9/11 happened, I was pretty worried. I had a very bad feeling about just the very sudden turn towards war and, you know, the Patriot Act and things like that. And then, so I wound up trying to read as much as I could because of that, and started listening to alternative media shows and things, and got pretty involved with that and efforts to expose 9/11 and oppose the war and things like that. And along the way, I happened across information on an alternative talk show about Columbine. There were some researchers talking about Columbine, and I thought, this is mind-blowing. So I got more into it, and I read some of the police documents that feature, the information that was not really put across in the media about witness accounts of what happened that day. And it was like 9/11 or Oklahoma City all over again, even though it was a different type of event. It was a shooting, not a bombing. You know, and it was high school kids, or so it seemed. But it was just really mind-blowing. And so I thought, well, nobody has made this into a movie, but, you know, it really needs, I think, some more attention. So that's how I got involved.
Yeah, and your movie, The Columbine Cause, once again, you made that in 2007, is that right?
Yeah.
Now, what's the reaction been to the movie so far?
It's the way that the movie is somewhat oriented is towards, well, I figure there's this big 9/11 movement and all that kind of stuff existing. I mean, it got to a point in 2006, 2007 where there was a new 9/11 video coming out every 3 months. Somebody was, you know, making a new one. That was taking off so much. I figured, well, somebody will probably pick up on it there and it'll spread. And it has spread somewhat, but it just didn't take off quite as much as I thought it was going to. But then again, I do see more people discussing it on message boards. It surprises me now how, like, that it kind of has caught on a little more.
Yeah, it takes time. You know, it's word of mouth, and there always comes a tipping point, though, and I think we're getting there with this, because I just discovered this a couple weeks ago, and I'm doing what I can to spread the word, and I know everyone who listens to us will spread the word, and that's how it happens, you know. So now, has there been any people getting in contact with you from, like, let's just say, official government agencies, anyone saying, hey, what are you doing? And no threats or anything like that, right?
No, definitely not. I mean, they seem to try to ignore it more than anything, although probably the closest that I came to any official recognition or something like that was there was an article by Alan Prendergast, who has written a lot of Columbine articles for a site called Westward, which is a Denver, Colorado blog, and it was called Who Should Be the Keepers of Columbine Secrets, and he wrote, basically the article was about there's still a lot of unreleased records related to Columbine, and, you know, should these be public or shouldn't they be? And basically he was saying they should release the rest because they haven't released the rest, we get these wild, you know, theories such as this video, and he linked to the video.
Yeah.
and actually I wrote a reply on that saying it's actually not that they're holding information back that, you know, people are questioning this. It's because of the information that they have put out.
Yes. Yeah, just read what they've released. But that is always...
They haven't released everything. And there's some people who would say, you know, release all the evidence. But truthfully, if you just look, they already have released a lot. And if you just look through what they have released, you come across pretty suspicious evidence that they did not put the whole story into the official version at all. And I'm not talking about just little details here. I'm talking about how many people were involved in the shooting.
Mm-hmm. And what was I going to say about the? I think a lot of the stuff they're holding back that I've been able to see is like autopsy reports and stuff like that, right? In terms of
The big thing there were some details of autopsy reports. I think some of that has been released. the main and the crime scene photos they haven't released. At least most of them, they released some pictures of spent bullets and things like that. But I mean, obviously pictures of bodies and things. I'm not sure that needs to be.
Yeah.
I'm not sure there's really any kind of precedent for that to be released. One of the main things was the so-called basement tapes, which is Harrison Klebold. Essentially, it's their confession tape before they're talking about what they're going to do. And I mean, it is kind of fishy that they haven't released that. If they are really the confessions that they're supposed to be, they made a lot of video projects talking about doing some kind of shooting or something. So there's been some speculation that they haven't released those because it would become apparent that they really aren't the confession videos that we're supposed to believe they are. I don't really know. But again, the fact remains, they have released 30,000 pages of stuff. There's plenty in there to go through. And I think that if people would just start with that, they would see they already have released a lot of useful stuff.
Now, hasn't also some school surveillance camera video disappeared, or they don't always...
Well, yeah, there was one of the things that people say, especially, you know, when they're confronted with this thing of that many witnesses were talking about people other than Harrison Klebold involved, one of the common things people say is, but wait, wasn't this whole thing captured on video in the school surveillance cameras? And the answer is yes, however, and they did release this cafeteria surveillance tape, but there's two catches to that. I mean, the surveillance tape that they released only shows Harrison Klebold shooting in the cafeteria. However, the two things are, the first 8 minutes of the attack are missing from the tape. The official reason for this is that the janitor forgot to change the tape and then changed the 8 minutes in. But the first 8 minutes is when there are these reports of other shooters going through the cafeteria. The other catch is there's also, you know, they gave that a lot of publicity. They put the stills from the cafeteria tape on the cover of even Time magazine. However, if you look through, there's a couple of references in the documents to administration area videotape, which we never heard any reference to those. So you got to wonder what's on those tapes. So yes and no. You know, not the entire thing was not captured on videos, is essentially what was going on there.
But I think really, I speak for everyone, that if you're in the middle of a school shooting, the first thing you do if you're a janitor, you go change the videotape, you know, really.
Yeah, I don't think that's a very, it's not very believable as a story. You know, the shooting's been going on, there's pandemonium in the school, and the janitor says, oh, I forgot to change the tape. Yeah. Now, maybe he was way on the other side of the school, I don't know, but just on its face, it does not sound very believable, especially when those 8 minutes were very critical as far as possibly identifying other shooters in the cafeteria.
Now, on our show last week, I went over the official story and the timeline and stuff, but just in case people are unfamiliar with it and just need a reminder, why don't we go over the official story and how, like, the timeline of events just real quick. And so I'm sure everyone remembers the basic details, Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold, the lone two shooters in the Columbine Massacre, but why don't you just recap things for everybody real quick?
Sure. Well, the story is Harris and Klebold were, you know, trench coaters. They're into, you know, being intimidating and wearing the trench coats and so forth. And then one day, April 20th of their senior year, just a month before graduation, they blew up. And at some point before the massacre, it could have been hours before, it could have been a few minutes before, they dropped off some duffel bags full of large propane tank bombs in the cafeteria, set timers on them for them to explode, and then it seemed like they were going to shoot people coming out of the cafeteria. Well, the bombs didn't go off, but at about 11:15 to 11:18, somewhere in there, Harrison Klebold, standing on the west side of the school outside, starts shooting people outside. Klebold then sticks his head into the cafeteria briefly, doesn't shoot anybody, comes back out, goes into the school, into the library. They shoot a lot of people in the library. They then kind of meander around the school. They go into the cafeteria. And then by 12 o'clock, definitely by 12:08, they've gone back up to the library, and they commit suicide, you know, 45 minutes to an hour after it all started, and 12 people died. And officially, nobody help them. Nobody even knew anything about this plan, and that those two just acted alone.
Well, 12 students and one teacher died as well, right? 13?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, they injured about 23, 24 people with gunfire. They killed 13 and then themselves.
Yeah, and one of the people killed was, like I said, a teacher, David Sanders. Maybe we should hold off on that. But there's just a lot of anomalies and bizarre circumstances involving the attack. Because you said by 12:08, sharpshooters, police sharpshooters, were able to look through the windows of the library. And now, did they actually? Is the report that they actually saw them commit suicide, or that they just saw their dead bodies on the ground, and they knew that Harris and Klebold were dead by 12:08?
I'm not sure if that is even, you know, there's any truth to that whatsoever. That was the story. I believe that they saw them commit suicide. Was how they came up with the 12:08 time.
Yeah,
but as you're probably going to mention, there's a lot of evidence that did not happen.
Yes. Well, not only that they didn't kill themselves, but by 12:08, the attacks weren't finished because a lot of witnesses report shots and explosions being heard as late as like 3:45 in the afternoon, correct?
Yeah, that was even on the media. There's one of the actual latest. There's reports of there was a lot of students, a group of maybe 15 students, holed up in the cafeteria. And one of those students, well, several of them, but there was a very clear account from one of the students saying that there was like a gun fight, it seemed like, between two different parties going on in the cafeteria at 12:30. So that's, you know, a solid 20 minutes after Harris and Klebold were supposedly dead. There's what sounds like a gun fight going on outside. There's shots heard through the entire afternoon. And then there was actually a media report at like 3:30, 3:45, where the reporter is saying there's still shots being heard inside. Officially, that was some shock lock rounds, like the police shooting the locks off of the doors. But it really can't account for all of the shots that were being heard, and especially not gunfights.
Yeah, it's a little peculiar, to say the least. All right, so aside from the witnesses hearing shots after Klebold and Harris were done, also the amount of shots and the types of shots, a lot of people were reporting hearing automatic weapons fire, and Harris and Klebold, they just had semi-automatic guns or shotguns, right?
Yeah, there's quite a few, maybe 15 to 20 instances of somebody reporting that they heard what they believed to be automatic weapons, including there was one of the maintenance guys, I think at the park next door to the school, who said he had been in Vietnam, he knows what automatic weapons sound like. Some of the police had automatic weapons, but then again, most of the police didn't show up until well after the shooting had been underway for quite a while. One report that comes to mind, actually two, the 911 dispatcher who got a call from inside the library told CNN, I think it was Paul Azan, was saying, did it sound like automatic weapons? And the 911 dispatcher said, yeah, it sounded like automatic weapons. And another one was where one of the student witnesses from outside the school said that he saw two shooters outside the school shooting, and at the same time he heard, quote, very rapid shooting coming from inside the school. That doesn't indicate automatic necessarily saying very rapid, although the many witnesses who did specifically say it sounded like automatic weapons did.
According to the official report from the Jefferson County Sheriff's Department, I believe, that 339 rounds were fired total, 188 by the killers and 141 by the authorities. But once again, going back to ear witnesses and certain other ballistic evidence indicates much, you know, much too small of a number of rounds. Now, some estimates up to 1,000 were fired. Is that right?
Yeah, that was there was another investigator who mentioned that number. There are ballistics tables that include bullet fragments, and you can actually count how many bullets they found. Even in a Time magazine article, I believe it was the one called In Sorrow and Disbelief by Nancy Gibbs, even in that article, she wrote in Time magazine that there was not over 900 shots fired. So, you know, that would seem to corroborate the number there. So, I mean, even if you think about it, you know, if you were to break that down minute by minute, the shooting's going on for 45 minutes. You know, the killers are only shooting off 190 rounds. That's, you know, what is that? I mean, that's not very many per minute.
Yeah.
Compared to even some of the tapes that you hear, like the library 911 call, you can hear, you know, a lot of shots being fired. And even in the description of the first couple of minutes of the shooting, there's, you know, easily 50 rounds fired in the first couple of minutes. So, you know, that would, it seems like between the time, you know, the official time that the attack went on and the number of shots, they were just really trying to minimize the story of what happened. On the one hand, they're trying to sensationalize the emotional impact of everything. But then again, the law enforcement agencies, it seems like we're also trying to minimize their responsibility for stopping this horrible thing by saying, you know, well, it only went on until this long, and they only got so many shots off before we stopped it.
That could be true. That could be another key component here. They just wanted to cover themselves here. But also, 99 explosive devices were found in and around the school. Is that a correct number?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that's like half as many shots as they officially fired, almost. Not all of them were exploded, but I think it was like half were exploded or something like that. They had pipe bombs,
yeah.
The propane tank bombs. Officially, they only had two propane tank bombs. However, there's some reason to doubt that there may have been more. I've heard a secondhand report from a Columbine parent who said that there were over a dozen propane tanks in the cafeteria. I haven't been able to confirm that. But then there are other people who knew Harris who said Harris had been talking about he already had about 10 propane tanks and he was going to go buy more prior to the attack. So, but officially they had two propane tank bombs. According to one media story, one of the bombs had like a very advanced timer on it that led them to believe that they had maybe not made the bombs themselves. There were several articles that were referring to things like some of the bombs were crude, some of them were very advanced. Again, you know, if some were crude, some were advanced, were they made by the same people, perhaps, or different people with different levels of bomb-making skill? And then some of the bombs were just little CO2 cartridges from a BB gun stuffed with gunpowder, so relatively small devices, although a lot were in the medium range of like a 6-inch pipe bomb or something like that. But pretty serious. I mean, people thought they were grenades when they were throwing them.
Yeah, and the point of all this is just the sheer number of rounds fired and explosive devices. These are supposed to be just two kids, two high school kids, with two guns apiece, and they're carrying in 99 explosive devices into a school. Something just doesn't
make sense. Well, exactly. You think about how many of those you can even, excluding the little CO2 cartridges that Harris was referred to as crickets, I mean, those you could fit even 10 on your person, but just carrying in the pipe bombs, you could probably only fit, I mean, not that many into a duffel bag. They'd be really heavy, and you'd probably be trying to be really careful with those so that they wouldn't explode while you're trying to carry them in. But even that gets into the issue of the police said they believed that the method that they used for transporting the bombs into the school was duffel bags, and then you have witnesses talking that morning. One witness who actually said that she saw another shooter who she identified by name said that prior to the attack, she saw somebody who was not Harris or Cleveland. She identified him by name, but the name was blacked out, carrying a heavy-looking duffel bag into the school wearing a trench coat. And from the context of what she's saying, it seems that she was referring to not a student, but a friend of Cleveland. So that would seem to be an accomplice carrying in pipe bombs right there, or at least this heavy-looking duffel bag, you know, on the morning of the attack right there.
Yes, the eyewitness accounts, there were dozens and dozens of them who spotted other people helping them out, carrying duffel bags and other shooters, but also they all tend to corroborate each other. They're all in sync, you know. It's not like just one person saying something, then someone saying else, something else. They all match up, you know. So now a lot of people say, well, eyewitness accounts in a tragedy like this, they're going to be screwy. But just, again, the number of accounts and that they all corroborate. That indicates something else is going on, you know?
Yeah, I mean, usually, you know, physical evidence does trump eyewitness evidence in most cases. However, in this case, we don't have physical evidence. You know, you look at something like Oklahoma City or 9/11, we have videotape of Building 7. We have videotape of, you know, and pictures of what the Murrah building looked like after the truck bomb supposedly did all that damage to it. In Columbine, we really don't have that. We have some references to their reports of the lab work. We don't really know how honest that was. However, when you have this many eyewitness reports naming people by name and with such a high level of independent corroboration, that usually suggests that these reports are accurate. It's not that the students were either deliberately falsifying and falsely implicating these other people in murder, which is very serious. I don't think they'd be doing that in the first place, but that they weren't mistaken either, you know, just innocently mistaken in identifying these other people because there was so much corroboration. And it wasn't just a matter either of that they had a description of the person. I mean, they were naming it. They were saying,
yeah,
it was this guy, he was in my class, I was looking right in his eyes, I'm sure it was him, and this kind of thing. That, to me, is what this really all comes down to. We can talk about, the negligence of the police and this and that, but you have dozens of people saying that Harris and Klebold were not the only shooters. And that, to me, is probably the most disturbing piece of this whole puzzle of what happened at Columbine.
And you find that pattern in a lot of instances like this with shootings or like 9/11, Oklahoma City. Witnesses tell something, they say something, that they saw it, and then later on the government will come in and say, nah, you didn't see that, this is what you saw, you know. And they just correct the story for the eyewitness. And then eventually that becomes the story we're all told. And that's...
Yeah, well, that... And you, what happened in the Columbine investigation, the shooting happened April 20th, 1999. They then interviewed the witnesses, and you can read this in the police reports because that's mostly what the main release called 11,000 pages of investigative files. It's mostly witness interviews, and what you usually see is you have a lot of interviews that are one page that was like, Billy went to class that morning, he had never heard of the Trenchcoat Mafia, and he went out to lunch, end of interview. But then you get the ones that did see something happening, and they'll have three or four or five interviews. And what it usually is the first interview will say, you know, so-and-so identified this person, name redacted, shooting on this side of the school. She saw his acne and that he was very tall or something like this. She believes it was this person. And then that's in April and May and June, you get that type of interview. What they did then was they kind of identified all the problem spots because it seemed like they just wanted to pin it all on Harris and Klebold because they're dead, and it would be a really easy way, I would speculate, to just tie all of this up and just leave it, you know, blame it all on the dead kids, and then everybody just shuts up. And they figured out the witnesses who had seen something else, and they went back to them in the fall, in September, October, November, and they kept re-interviewing them and saying, you didn't see this other person, this was Dylan Klebold. And a lot of them, for one reason or another, did change their story. However, there were also a few that said, no, I don't care what you tell me. I know who I saw that day, and it was not Harris or Klebold. So you get both ways. You get people who just said, okay, fine, and then you get others who said, you know, absolutely not. And that's pretty much where it stands today.
Now, going through the list of shooters here, of course, we have Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold, who obviously were involved. Then we have other kids like Chris Morris is mentioned in a lot of the reports, Robert Perry, someone just described as the chiseled face shooter. Now he's an interesting character here because he's seen by a lot of people outside of the science rooms with Klebold, and he's always described as an adult, at least 25, usually in his 30s, they say. So now what does that indicate exactly? You know, is that a official government involvement or handlers or, you know, what's going on there?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, you have a couple of levels to this. People have to understand, we talk about the trench coat group. A lot of high schools have trench coders, and, you know, a lot of them are just nerds who are into the Matrix or whatever, and that's fine. That's really not, you know, I mean, you know, it is what it is. And then there's the kind of more scary, aggressive trench coders, who the more hardcore types. And people have to understand from the reports of what was going on at Columbine, Harris and Klebold were really more in the former category. They were more just wannabes. The more hardcore, aggressive types seem to have graduated the year prior. So you have one level of this where you have Harris and Klebold, of course, and then a bunch of trench coders who, for some reason, you know, they're identified by the witnesses, but then for some reason were exonerated. But then you have this guy who was reported by several people in the science hall during the shooting, that you had this adult with a shotgun. Now, I mean, that raises huge questions about, you know, when, I mean, myself included, trying to differentiate here, okay, was this some kind of major conspiracy? Was it a local level cover-up? You know, what was going on here? And it's like, so this trench coat group is high school kids living at home with their parents. That's not, you know, that doesn't leave a lot of holes or, you know, vulnerable points where they can be interfacing with some kind of handler. You know, yet it's like, here you see them with this shooter, you know, doing the shooting, and then there's an adult alongside them by these witness, you know, reports. So it raises huge questions about who this guy was and exactly whose idea this attack was. Who planned it? You know, were Harris and Klebold the planners of it, or were they just kind of helpers who, you know, were later, you know, put in this position of taking all the credit and the blame for it?
Yeah, and I believe earlier that morning, a parent was taking her kid to school there, and she reports seeing a man who kind of matches the description of the chiseled face shooter there, the adult, standing outside with a couple other guys in, like, black clothing and trench coats and stuff beforehand. Again, just these aren't just kids seeing it. There's other witnesses saying this kind of stuff. And also, we have the camo pants shooter was also seen, a guy in black and white camouflage pants. The blue jean bomber, a guy in a white T-shirt and blue jeans throwing bombs up on the roof of the school. A round face shooter, a short shooter, the baggy pants shooter, a guy just named Joe. There was a gunman reported on the roof and another in the nearby park. So something's going on here, you know? It's like,
I can actually, at the point of making the video, that was how I presented, you know, kind of lump these witness reports together. You can even go a little bit further than that than I went in the video, because if you look through the sheriff's office final report, which was what they released after their 13-month investigation, they released on May 15, 2000, this report, sheriff's office final report on the Columbine High School shooting. There's a page in there. It was a CD-ROM. They put it out. You can find it online. There's a page in there called Trench Coat Mafia and Associates. On that file, they basically address what we're talking about right now. They say, yes, there were witnesses who identified other shooters. And the way that they have it there, they say there was Harris and Klebold, and then there was four other student suspects. They don't mention this adult, this chiseled face shooter, who according to them was just Eric Harris, because nobody was able to put a name to him.
Yeah.
They were able to write that one off as just, you know, they didn't have to deal with it in any more detail because nobody could really press them on it. But as far as the other ones that were named, you had Chris Morris, Robert Perry, Joe Stair, and Brian Sargent. And those names are not in the Trench Coat Mafia and Associates file, but you can see from the police say what their alibis were, and you can match it up that way. But you basically, so you have Harris and Klebold plus these other four trench coat kids. Chris Morris, who was the leader of the group, he was reputedly very violent and, you know, was always pulling knives on people and couldn't even get along with the other trench coaters. He's getting into fights with them and things like that. Robert Perry, who was, he was tall like Klebold, but his hair was longer and he had severe acne and crooked teeth, which many people noted on the day of the attack. There was also Brian Sargent, who was probably the round face shooter. He had kind of a bowl cut, a slight mustache. He was about 5'9", 5'10", and was kind of chubby, had a round face. The Joe guy would probably have been Joe Stare, who they're referring to. I say that. I don't know, again. One, he had graduated the year prior. He was a trench coder. He had threatened to blow up the school in the past, according to these reports. And some of the people who said that, there were four or five people who said while they were holed up in the cafeteria, they heard the attackers saying, "Joe, where are you? Got three of them in here." Also, one of the students who saw that happen said three shooters came into the cafeteria, everybody started running, and one of the shooters she didn't recognize. One of the shooters was a current student, and one was a student who had graduated the year prior. Again, that would fit his description. Also, a student named Leah Murphy, in her statement, put Joe Stare on campus that morning. Again, since he had graduated, he shouldn't have been on campus. So while she didn't say that he had a gun, it is suspicious, given, you know, a shooter named Joe and all of this. So that's what I would probably say. You could probably break it down into seven shooters, possibly eight, depending on whether the guy in the blue jeans was the same guy as the chiseled face or not. You're probably looking at seven or eight, maybe 10 shooters.
Now, has anyone been able to track down these other shooters? What have they been doing these last few years? Anyone know what happened?
There was a report called, it was basically one of the students that was killed, Daniel Robo, Roba, who was, he was shot outside the school. He was one of the first that was killed out on the west side of the school. His father, Brian, who has since gone on to, he's like a very conservative political figure and heads an anti-abortion thing. He's been very outspoken about a cover-up of Columbine and that he hasn't been very satisfied with the official version of, the investigation. At his request, there was a sort of reinvestigation on the part of the El Paso County Sheriff's Department. There were several county sheriff's departments involved in the investigation. The El Paso County, like Jefferson County, was one of them. And that report, I believe, was in 2002, where they went back and re-interviewed a lot of these witnesses and things. At that time, Robert Perry was refusing to, I think in 2002, the investigators went to his house and Perry's mother just said, "He's not talking, go away." And that was that. We don't know what he's doing. Chris Morris, I think, had a computer job, according to those files. But, we don't know. So, I mean, they never went to trial or anything like that. And, according to the government ballistics reports, their fingerprints weren't on any of the weapons and so forth. It raises questions if, there were other weapons that were later disposed of, used, and so forth. They had fairly weak alibis. Most of them were just family or friends alibis. It wasn't like they were at work or something like that. So, you can't say conclusively what happened with regard to that, but, it seems like mostly just the police endorsed their alibis. They went on to lead their lives and so forth, and they're probably just out working somewhere today. Joe Stare did commit suicide in 2007, actually, now that I think about it, except the only thing was he was found dead with a noose around his neck, so, it seemed it was a hanging. However, there was blood, this is a little graphic, blood coming out of his nose and pooled on the floor, which does not usually happen with a hanging, so some evidence of foul play, perhaps. I would add, he had started to post messages onto a message board that was a research-based message board that was skeptical of the Columbine attack. So, was this, if it was foul play, was it maybe because somebody was afraid he was going to spill the beans? Speculation, but, that would be a best guess on my part.
Yeah, and there are
but again,
other...
if there was adults involved, these kids, there's lots of speculation, were they hypnotized? Do they even remember what they did? I don't know, but there's a lot of evidence. Well, there's at least some evidence indicating if there was adults involved, these kids might have just been, little more than pawns in this whole thing anyway, you know.
And there are some other bizarre deaths associated in the aftermath of the attacks, but also a bizarre death in the attacks, and that would be the teacher that we mentioned earlier, David Sanders. He was one of the first people wounded in the attack, but he didn't die until hours later. He basically just bled to death because of the slow response of the SWAT team and the police outside. Yeah, we really just didn't touch on that too much, but the police, they didn't enter the building for hours. And in some reports, they were saying, well, we knew we were outgunned. There's SWAT teams outside, and again, Harris and Klebold only had two guns each. So why would they think they're outgunned unless there were other shooters and other rifles and whatnot? But David Sanders, why don't you explain what happened to him and how he died?
Yeah, he went into the cafeteria. Basically, he told people to clear out of the cafeteria, like, there's shooting going on, everybody get out of here. And then he got shot in the neck sort of face area, and fell on his face. I guess some of his teeth got knocked out. And then he went into a classroom, one of the science rooms, and then people were successful in keeping him alive and stuff. He did say he wasn't sure if he was going to live through it and, you know, tell his daughters he loved them and that kind of thing. But he did, from the student report, they managed to keep him alive. Basically, he only died when the SWAT team got there. And, I mean, there's some, we don't exactly know what happened between when the SWAT team, or the, you know, the first responders got there and got to him, but, you know, it's like his shirt had been removed, possibly sending him into shock. That's a speculation, but his shirt had been removed by that time. And there's some strange reference to that one of the teams going through the school early on said that they found a bunch of bodies in the library and then one in a closet off of the hallway. So, you know, again, it was like, had the EMS, like, gotten to Sanders, and then, you know, 3 or 4 hours after he'd been shot, and then, like, moved him into this closet, and there was another report that there was like, a lot of blood, like, a trail of blood leading up to where they eventually found him. So I can't say I have all the details on that, but there's some references to that in the report that seemed to indicate some monkey business. His daughter, actually, I think, was suing for a while and then settled for a lot of money to drop the case. There's several wrongful death suits in this whole thing. I mean, the parents were not really very satisfied with what had happened. You know, you mentioned the police not going in for hours. And this was something that was blamed on a policy that they had, and that one of the good things that came out of Columbine was that they changed their policy towards active shooters to just go in, that there was some policy keeping them out from apprehending them. I don't know. You know, I mean,
it's odd.
It's very suspicious. But one thing that came out of this, because there was wrongful death suits and everything, before the investigation was even over, I mean, it was taking them a year, but it was like, before it was even over, the Colorado governor commissioned a special committee to reinvestigate it while it was still being investigated, because people just had such low confidence in the way the investigation was going. First of all, why did it take 13 months to get this report out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, two other key points about the events of that day were the deaths of Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold. Now, we touched on it earlier, but they were in the library, and they supposedly shot themselves. But again, that's peculiar because, why don't you explain some of the inconsistencies with their death?
The two biggest things for me, one actually did not make it into the video. I just discovered it a little bit later on. Probably the first thing, Harris and Klebold supposedly killed themselves, I guess simultaneously in the library. Now, there's some evidence that they maybe, I mean, you would think if somebody's going to shoot themselves, they're going to do it standing up. The way that their bodies were ultimately photographed seems to indicate that at least Klebold was lying on the floor at the time of the shooting, unless he happened to shoot himself. I mean, they shot themselves in the head. It's pretty gruesome. I put a censored picture of it in the video so you can look at it without being too disturbed by it. But, you know, so Klebold shoots himself in the head. obviously, I mean, head wounds create lots of blood very quickly, so he would have had blood running down his face. However, the thing is, Harris's pant leg has a big blood patch on it, and there's also some on the other pant leg. From the way Klebold's lying on the floor, it looks like a bullet would have gone through his head, and then the blood would have splattered onto Harris's pants. The only other explanation that, like, the only other way that could have happened would have been if, you know, Klebold had shot himself in the head, his face had been covered with blood instantaneously, and then he fell face first onto Harris's knee. That's, like, the only way that that probably could have happened. So that seems to be a strong indication that Klebold had been, like, shot on the ground or something strange went on. There's another
very bizarre. Because the blood, like you said, the blood pattern on Harris's pant leg there, it's down below the knee and on the shin, and it's kind
of
right. Yeah,
it probably was not Harris's blood.
Yeah, and it looks in direct placement. If Klebold was lying on the ground and was shot in the head, that looks like the exact spot where the blood from his head would land, but that would mean Harris would already be on the ground as well, and he's kind of in a bent, contorted position against the bookshelf, and his head wound puts blood on the bottom shelf of the bookshelf there. So that would indicate he's on the ground, too, when he's shot. It's certainly strange.
Yeah, I mean, with the Harris part especially, again, it's hard to say exactly what happened. You know, there's blood on the books behind Harris's head. I mean, if it had been a shotgun that did it with Harris, there's definitely blood there, you know, and some of the books are disturbed. It's hard to say. The other thing, though, is there was a media article afterward that had a medic who came into the library against police wishes to pronounce the dead that afternoon. He said when he reached the bodies, one of them had a trench coat on. It was in a Colorado newspaper. So obviously, as you've seen the picture, neither of them is wearing a trench coat in that picture.
Yeah.
So it seems like, I mean, if that story is true, that the medic gets in that afternoon, sees the bodies there, one of them is wearing a trench coat, but then by the time the picture gets taken, there's no trench coat. Somebody was definitely moving their bodies, it seems like. So, you know, we can speculate somewhat about whether Harris and Klebold killed themselves based on that. But we do have to take into account, it seems like somebody was moving their bodies around. We don't know completely why or what they were trying to cover up or what they were trying to do.
It's also worth mentioning Klebold, the entry wound was on the left side of his head, and he was right-handed. And there was no gun in his left hand at all found there. So, yeah, if the bodies were being moved around, also some of the victims, there would seem to be some indications that some of the victims' bodies were moved around. Like, weren't a few supposed to be in a stairwell somewhere, but then they ended up in the library? Or what's the story on that?
Well, that's another issue, which is one of the more, I guess, controversial ones, just because it seems so nonsensical or irrational. But you have lots of reports of what would seem to be extra dead. I mean, again, officially, there were two dead outside, one in a classroom, and then 10 in the library, plus 12 in the library, 10 plus the two killer, plus Harrison Klebold. So you have 15 dead. None of them were in a stairwell. None of them were in a cafeteria. Yet you have witness reports talking about all the dead bodies in the hallway, or we walked down the stairs and saw three bodies, or on the way out of the cafeteria, she was stepping over bodies. It's like we really have no idea what was going on there. It's more a question of it's more an issue, I guess, of unanswered questions than we're figuring out exactly, you know, an alternative timeline as to what was going on. But yeah, certainly I'd say were at least a good 20 reports of extra dead. Another very interesting one was there was a triage set up in the parking lot, which treated lots of people. I don't know why these people didn't make it onto the injured list for some reason, but there was lots of people treated out in the parking lot by medics. And then there's one report from a police officer who was, I guess, overseeing things at the triage, and said that the worker, they came upon a victim with some kind of like major wound who was pulseless and not breathing. But then the nurse or whoever it was started an IV anyway and then moved on to the next patient. Now, if you're pulseless and not breathing, you're not alive. So that would be somebody dead. Yet officially all the dead were left in the school. So I'd say there's a lot of questions about, I really can't come up with a, you know, I can't come up with a motive there, but that doesn't, or at least a very, you know, compelling motive there that would make sense to me. Then again, I don't really know who all was really doing this and why, so that's why my imagination is limited on that subject. However, just because you can't come up with a motive doesn't mean that you have to discount the evidence, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, and wasn't there also another report, like a lady called in to 911 there, and she was saying she saw somebody dragging a body out of the school by their feet or something, and she was all upset,
yeah,
like she was treating a body like that.
Yeah, that was a lady that called in the 911. She said she had experience in law enforcement in Pennsylvania. It was an older sounding woman, and she was complaining that she saw on the news that they were dragging a body outside down the steps, and that she described it, I think, as a man, and that, yeah, they're dragging the body by the feet. Again, I mean, it's like, was it one of these extra bodies? If it was an extra person, you know, who was it? Was it an extra shooter? You know, we really don't know. There's so many questions here raised by the evidence that don't really seem to have any good explanation, which to me suggests that this entire thing there really might be a lot more to this that just nobody's really even suspected.
Yeah, we'll get into that in a minute here. But also, the FBI, lead FBI investigator, Dwayne Facilier, is that correct? Am I pronouncing that
right? I don't think I've ever heard his name actually pronounced. That's the way I do it, though.
It seems French. But now, to tell people about him, he's the lead FBI investigator. He has two kids that go to Columbine, and one of the sons was making movies with Harrison Klebold about a school shooting, right?
Yeah, I don't know if it was specifically with Harrison Klebold, but it was with the Trenchcoat Group. I guess Harrison Klebold, one of their big subjects was the video class. They made these videos. Some of them you can see online. I think YouTube did a big purging of Columbine videos last year for some reason. I'm not sure why, but someone alerted me, hey, they're taking down Columbine videos. But they did a bunch of videos, Hitmen for Hire, where, you know, we're the Trenchcoat Mafia, we'll protect you from the jocks, and this kind of thing, and they're shooting jocks in the video. But in the year, that was what got the publicity, because it makes Harrison Klebold look, you know, it's very incriminating towards them specifically. However, in the couple of years prior to Harrison Klebold even coming on the scene, you had the other older Trenchcoaters making lots of videos and things that are all on the same theme of like the Trenchcoaters running around shooting. I think that particular video that got some attention that Fusilier's son was involved with, it was supposed to be a parody of Get Smart, but again, it's like you have the elements of Trenchcoaters running around the school shooting people and then the school exploding at the end, which is the basic elements of the Columbine attack, and also the Joe Stare fantasies of blowing up the school and that kind of thing. So I think there's, you know, the media has a lot of power to shape our perception. Even those of us who are trying to question things, you know, we might think a piece of evidence slipped through the cracks sometimes, and sometimes it does, but then sometimes I think they might be really showing it to us to mislead us in one way. But it's like all these video projects that we never really saw, we should be asking questions about, well, what was in those videos? And does it show, you know, the rest of the Trenchcoat Mafia really maybe of plan, you know, having plans for this kind of thing for years, and that it really maybe wasn't Harrison Klebold whose idea this was. But yeah, so it's the lead supervisor for the case for the FBI. His son is involved closely with the Trenchcoat Mafia making these videos. We don't know how close he was with the group. He wasn't identified by current students. He graduated a couple of years prior, so people wouldn't have known him as well. But, you know, he wasn't identified directly as being a member of the group. But We really don't know. There's a lot of questions there as to, you know, obviously, was there some, you know, law enforcement handling setting this thing up through
and,
some of these kids?
And the FBI guy's other son was apparently in the cafeteria right when this all started. And he got out
I think
safely.
His name was Brian. His statement to police is it's like a nice model of you know, it's you look through the witness reports, his statement is just like a nice model of, it's very neat, there's a little map in it, you know, and everything went the way that that the police had supposed it did. He didn't see anything suspicious and so forth, but yeah, anyway, this the younger Fusilier was in the school at the time, and I don't know, you know, I can't say what the relationship is as to how funny it was that this major shooting happened under this guy, who I guess was a major guy in the FBI. He was a psychologist. He's the guy who came up with the depressive and the psychopath theory. He was the guy who was on the Oprah's 10th anniversary special that got pulled at the last minute. He's the guy who worked with Dave Cullen, who wrote the book Columbine, which is supposed to be the authoritative book on the shooting.
Yeah.
And he's an FBI psychologist and negotiator. He was at Oklahoma City, Waco, and
And isn't it interesting that Oklahoma City and Waco and like Ruby Ridge and all this stuff, they all have them around April 19th, April 20th. It's always like the same date.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have the Waco thing ended on April 19th.
Yeah.
Tim McVeigh supposedly did the Oklahoma City bombing in retribution for Waco, and he did it on the second anniversary of that. And then you look at even other events. I mean, the Virginia Tech happened around the same time. The Port Arthur massacre in Australia in 1996, that happened, I think, April 26th or 16th. There seems to be a lot that happens that week. I don't think we saw anything this year, but... you know, I don't know. It's in past
certainly,
years, it definitely seems to have some
coincidental. And also, another kid we got to mention, this Brooks Brown character, he apparently was pals with the Fusilier kids in the Trenchcoat Mafia, and he's another kid that he said, well, he ran into Harrison Klebold, and they told him, hey, don't go into school today, something's going to happen. And, of course, this Brooks Brown, he's just all over the place giving interviews afterwards, right, pushing the story.
Yeah, I mean, he was one of the first ones that wrote a book, No Easy Answers, which I guess he had help on with a professional writer. You know, and then his father, Randy Brown, was actually, I guess because they were implicated, because Brooks was being questioned, Brooks made a comment at some point in the media that he said, I am a smokescreen for Sheriff Stone's incompetence. Jeff Cope, Jefferson County Sheriff, John Stone was using Brooks as like a distraction for, was Brooks the third shooter and this sort of thing. So I guess the Browns maybe got somewhat involved because there was some implication that Brooks had been directly involved in the shooting and they were trying to clear their names. But yeah, he was all over the media. He was in Bowling for Columbine and this and that. And he probably knows a lot of stuff. I mean, from just the witness reports, it seemed like he was demonstrating foreknowledge of the attack. He said that he heard something big was going to happen on 420, that kind of thing. So, you know, he's probably trying to, I don't know, you know, how involved he was or not. But, you know, it does seem like they maybe got involved to kind of clear their name and that kind of thing. But, you know, they probably all, but then again, you know, Randy Brown has said, you know, oh, I don't think Robert Perry was involved. I think they're just mistaken Klebold. I mean, they want to steer everybody away from looking into this any closer except for incompetence. So,
yeah,
you know, I don't know that they're going to be any real help.
And that's just not possible. Klebold and Perry, they look similar, but once again, Perry had the severe acne problem. And these are kids that went to school with them, you know? You're not going to confuse one kid that you know with another kid, you know? It just doesn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, they were both tall and kind of gangly, but
yeah,
if somebody has severe acne... I mean, Klebold did not have any acne. And, you know, all these people are going, you know, well, he had, like, severe acne. They didn't know Perry or Klebold, but they were like, well, you know. And then some of them said, well, okay, fine, maybe it was Klebold. But then you had other people saying, well, no, I knew Perry personally, you know, like, I mean, through friends. this was Perry, not Klebold. So.
And wasn't there, I think I read a good website that will mention Echoes of Columbine, a message board that you're over there posting on a lot. And I think I read one of your posts this afternoon about a kid who they said he didn't want to go back to Columbine because the killers were still in the classes with him.
That was Chris Wisher. He spoke out. There's a clip of him on YouTube. If you look up Chris Wisher Columbine, you'll see a clip of him talking about that he saw three shooters outside, including the white T-shirt, blue jeans bomber. this is from news reports from 420. And he's there talking. He's saying the reporter's asking him, well, did you identify this other person who got arrested? And he's like, yeah, I can't say it's 100%, but I'm almost positive that the guy that they were just putting into the police car was one of the kids shooting at us. And that was Chris Morris. And then Wisher later told an alternative media reporter named, Newshawk, John Quinn, told him that a lot of his friends didn't want to go back to school because some of these other people that they had seen shooting were still there at the school. So, you know, other students, sergeant and people like that. So, yeah, I mean, you got to keep in mind, people go, well, so why don't these witnesses talk about it now? Or like, you know, I mean, my joke has been, it was 8 years and then you finally heard about this from me. Like, mm-hmm. Who am I? I just put this video together. And people think, well, you know, if there's something to this, why didn't we hear anything from witnesses? Imagine this. You're like a normal person. You're trying to live your life. You're even 17 or 18, you're in high school, and then you're walking down the street one day and you see something horrific, but then you see later on the news that it's not, and you even tell the police, but then the police come back and they're like, no, you didn't see that, but you know what you saw. And then, you know, you're trying to live your life. What do you think the odds are, the average person going on a crusade, risking being called a conspiracy nut and everything else, and risking having their whole reputation and their whole public identity be tied up with, oh, that was a guy who saw another shooter at Columbine. You know, what do you think the odds are that you're going to do that versus just quietly, you know, holding on to your story in private? I mean, I think most people are not going to, like, try to get on the news just to talk about that. They'll assume, well, you know, I'm too little to do anything, and I don't want to mess up my name. So, you know. But then you do have a couple, like,
a couple of those shooters are still out there running around, you know? And if you start saying, like, hey,
yeah,
I saw
and,
kids.
You know, again, not just the kids. I mean, the kids were, in my opinion, probably pawns. I think it probably goes a lot higher than that.
Mm-hmm. And also a couple other, like we said, bizarre deaths associated with it, whether it's connected in any way, witnesses that saw too much, or just, you know, bizarre coincidences. Other people were dying in the aftermath. Two kids were gunned down outside of a subway in a robbery or something, right? And then another kid's mom just walked into a pawn shop and shot herself in the head for some unknown reason.
There was a shooting. According to Donna Taylor, who's the mother of Mark Taylor, one of the survivors, you can find a couple of clips of them on YouTube and some interviews and things that they've done questioning, including saying that Donna said that a student at Columbine came up to her and said, I saw three trench coat mafia guys, not Harris or Klebold, taking guns out of the trunks of their car that morning. So, you know, anyway. According to her, it was friends of Klebold. They were shot working. They were working at a Subway one night. Or it was a girl and her boyfriend. Her boyfriend was working at Subway, closing for the night. Nicholas Kunzelman, I think, was his name. And I want to say Stephanie Hart was the girl's name. But she was picking him up, and then there was a shooting at the Subway. They both were killed. No money was taken, and the security cameras were off. So that was very suspicious as far as, like, was that something related to Columbine? Perhaps, I don't know. The other death you just mentioned was?
The kid's mother who walked into a pawn shop.
Oh, Anne-Marie Hochhalter's mother. Anne-Marie was paralyzed. She was in a wheelchair. She was shot in the back. She was one of the first people shot out on the outside of the school. And her mother went into a pawn shop, asked to see a gun, and then shot herself in the head. Now, I mean, would the gun have been loaded? You know, did she bring in the ammo? In which case, how would she have known what kind of gun? And
yeah.
It's a lot of questions.
Yeah, certainly.
Just what her motive was. Her daughter was recovering. Why would she have killed herself? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, so
actually, on that note, I'll tell you, I did have one witness tell me personally. I won't give any identifying information at all, even gender, but this witness told me that the witness was one of the ones who had seen an attacker other than Harrison Klebold and told this to the police, and then was told subsequently, wants to speak out, but was actually threatened, was told you could be made to disappear very easily. So that's at least one case where someone was threatened to keep quiet.
Yeah. So what the hell happened that day? Let's figure this out. It was either these kids, if you look into their backgrounds, this Trenchcoat Mafia, they're obviously, they had some issues. Like you bring out in your movie there, Satanism, bloodletting, all kind of weird occult kind of, cultish kind of stuff. So was this just a group of kids who got together and did something heinous, and then the local authorities, through their own incompetence and stupidity, couldn't conduct a proper investigation and then just spent the time covering them, you know, their own asses? Or is this something much larger, and is this a staged black ops, like PSYOP operation to just brutalize the American people and take away gun rights and more freedoms? Which was it? Where do you lean on this?
I lean toward the latter there, although I have given consideration to the first. I mean, I'm legitimately trying to figure out what's going on here. I admit I got into this on the suggestion that we've seen how many of the large, I mean, 9/11 obviously was a huge event. I mean, because of it, you know, it was most likely a complete scam. I mean, as far as, you know, controlled demolition in the buildings. But its effects are much more obvious as far as we're now fighting two major wars because of it and so forth. You look at Columbine, it's a much smaller event. But again, you see a lot of the same patterns. So that I admit that's how I got into it. I've since thought, well, okay, you know, I do want to find out what's going on. Maybe it was just a smaller event. First off, I would say I'd lean... I think one thing you can say that suggests that there was a great deal of effort putting into covering this up was just the sheer fact that it took 13 months for them to release their final report. And even then, they made statements referring to that they wouldn't comment on things, even after that came out, referring to an ongoing investigation. I mean, it was just like they really – it was handled in just the – such a strange way. I mean, it wasn't just a case of bumbling police. The behavior that you see, it's hard to summarize, but if you read the police statements throughout the investigation and following the investigation, it's very suspicious. It does not seem like cops who just couldn't get it together. You also see a lot of the patterns. If you look at the governor's commission, which was... Their final report was released in 2001, a year after the sheriff's report was released. If you read the recommendations in that, a lot of it's very similar to 9/11, of what the governor recommended be like the changes that would be made as, you know, lessons from the shooting. And it was all things like interoperability of the police services. Just like on 9/11, we heard that 9/11 happened because the CIA and the FBI weren't communicating enough and that kind of thing. There's a lot of parallels throughout it to me that seem to indicate that this is a larger event. Also, you have an adult in there. I mean, that to me is, according to the police, as according to the witnesses, as a shooter, that to me is very suspicious that this goes beyond just some local cover-up where the cops screwed up. They had so much evidence, they almost didn't know how to get rid of it fast enough, how to make these witnesses shut up fast enough. You know, if they had wanted to go after any of these other kids, I would have think they would have had a fairly easy time. And plus, you know, they're under so much criticism from the community of saying, you know, what are you doing? You're screwing up this case so badly. Wouldn't you have wanted to say, well, we did everything else wrong, but we caught one of the shooters? I mean, that would have gotten them some major points on the part of the community. But they didn't do that. And it's just, it to me, is very suspicious and suggests a larger cover-up. And I think you see that also where there's, in the Port Arthur massacre shooting, and there's a video about that now, a recent video, called A Question of Guilt, the Massacre of Port Arthur, which puts together some of the evidence of that. That it's a similar question of, it's like, you know, was the guy that they pinned it on a patsy, and was really the shooting done by the police or the intelligence services? I think that might be what we're looking at Columbine, as unbelievable as it might be.
Yeah, and I was going to mention the mind control and stuff, possibilities and the occult and whatnot, but if it was just a conspiracy and they're setting Harris and Klebold up as patsies, why just those two? Why not set the whole Trenchcoat Mafia up as patsies? Why not kill them all and say, look, we got them all? You know, all these kids did it. And it was, because that, at least if they admit that, oh, yeah, we got eight kids involved in this, it explains all the discrepancies in the evidence. So why not frame all the kids instead of just the two?
Yeah, well, I think the thing is that it wasn't just confined to those kids, you know, as you're, you know, suggesting there. It's, you have this, you know, at least one adult being implicated in it. If that's the case, you can't pin it on the kids, because the kids are going to say, you know, this, I'm not the whole story here, and you're going to hear the whole story.
But what if they, just rubbed out all those kids, you know? But I guess,
they killed them, you said.
Like they put in the police, like they sent in a SWAT team early and just eliminate all the Trenchcoat Mafia kids and say, hey, look, here we got them all.
Oh. Well, some of the kids, some of them, like Morris, it seems like he was only there for like a couple of minutes. From like the witness reports, it seems like he was out of there fairly quick. From the people who put him on the scene, that's really hard to say. I don't know, and it's like it's these kind of things where we're never gonna know all of these details, and there's a lot of things where we don't know either way what happened. So it is hard to speculate. Why they didn't just kill them all. I really can't say. But I think the lesson to be learned here is just, you listen to what we've even just been talking about in the last hour versus the thing. When these kinds of events happen, you just have to almost just basically automatically reject the official version.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm learning that more and more. People say, well, you see conspiracies and everything. Well, I want it if someone would just tell the truth once. You know, just tell the truth once, and then I wouldn't need to look for a conspiracy. But as far as the shooting all the kids, I guess, here's the thing, though. Like you said, maybe the Chris Morris, he just and this Robert Perry kid, maybe they bailed early and got out of there, so then the government couldn't take them out. So they had to pin it on the two kids. Or another way of looking at it, maybe they wanted to protect the assets. You know, if they did invest in these kids, make them into little Manchurian candidate kids, why waste them all at once, you know? You still got them as an asset if you need them later. That's another possibility, I suppose.
That's a very good point. I've seen another researcher bring that up, that maybe, again, speculating, but as another person pointed out, speculating based on evidence is how crimes are solved. So it's, mm-hmm. Certainly, a good thing to do. That possibly, some of these kids might be assets, and they might be, this might have just been the start of their career as an asset. You know, they might be used to infiltrate larger organizations later on. This Trenchcoat Mafia. Okay, 9/11, it's blamed on Arabs. You get Arabs demonized, and then we go to war with them. Yeah. The Oklahoma City shooting, you get the right wing demonized, and then you get Time magazine coming out with how dangerous are they, the militias and everything.
Yeah.
So it's this process of create an event, pin it on an enemy, demonize them, and then you mobilize public opinion against them. So it's like, here you have these bright, admittedly like scary hacker kids, a lot of it's involved with the computer culture and things. I mean, who are potentially going to be enemies of the state later on. So it's like, well, why not just, if looking at it from kind of, art of war perspective, from the perspective of the state, well, why not just nip it in the bud? Since they have this, they seem to have an identifiable culture, why not just, smear the whole culture and kind of just, destroy your enemy in a kind of embryonic state before they can grow up and be a real threat is one idea. As far as, like, you know, they had this trench coat mafia, and then it seems to have been, you know, either created for this purpose or infiltrated
and manipulated.
And then you have these violent events seeming to come from that group. So then the group kind of just has to disband.
Now, I know people hearing this think, oh, mind control and occult stuff, it's all just nonsense. No, our whole government was built on occult stuff and symbolism, and look into it. But mind control is very, MK Ultra, read up on it. You know, this is stuff the government was doing. You know, they're still doing it. So just be aware of it. But, yeah, it's just bizarre. People hear you talking about this, and they think, oh, you're just crazy. But, well, just look into it, you know. Yeah, that's all I'm saying. But another, we were talking about coincidences and similarities to 9/11. Another one we should mention, and to me this indicates that there's more afoot here than we're being told, is wasn't in, I think it was Eric Harris's journal, but, like, the exact plan was to blow up the school, kill 500 people. Then they wanted to hijack a plane and fly it into a New York skyscraper.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, in 1999, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it's 2 years before 9/11, or a year and a half before 9/11, and you get Eric Harris's plan in his diary to, you know, that this, like, escape fantasy where he's going to blow up the school, then hijack a plane, and then I think the quote is something like, fly it into New York City, shooting all the way, or something like that. So.
Yeah.
Now, it's like, where did he get this idea? Because I got to say, I've never thought of that in my entire life. And that was one thing long before, in 99, when that story came out, long before I ever heard anything about other shooters at Columbine, I thought to myself, you know, that's kind of out of character. I mean, it just doesn't fit the whole bullied kid. So, okay, why does a bullied kid, you can believe the shooting jocks part. Why does a bullied kid want to fly a plane into buildings in New York City? It doesn't make any sense. There's even a drawing in his diary of the New York City skyline, I think, with a plane on it. So it's like, clearly that was a very concrete idea in his mind, or if it was a forgery, let's say. I mean, see, because you got a bunch of possibilities here, depending on how deep this thing really was. I mean, who really planned this, or, you know, I mean, because you get different scenarios. Just like on 9/11, you get people talking about, okay, did Arabs come up with the plot and then the government let it happen? Or did the government, like, you know, kind of like the terrorists were there and then the government helped it happen? Or really did the government come up with, you know, or an element within the government come up with a whole plan, and the private sector, I'd have to add, come up with this whole plan and then just, like, hire actors, you know, Arabs to, like, act as the actors? And it's like, you got to look at Columbine in the same kind of case. Like, who really came up with this plan? How far in advance was the whole thing thought up? And were the planners working on and responsible for other similar scams, similar crimes and terrorist activity? And that's where you get into these questions. It's a little mind-boggling, I got to say. You know, even for me, I'm somewhat used to working with this material. It's hard to consider, but sometimes you have to wonder, okay, well, you get this Harris plan of flying planes into buildings just like 9/11, if there was some connection here, you know, we might be looking at the same kind of thing. And you mentioned MKUltra and the mind control and that kind of stuff. People should definitely, there's lots of information on that, actually. It's just MKULTRA, one word. Synonyms for that program were Artichoke and Bluebird, Operation Artichoke, Bluebird, MK Search, MK Delta. People can look up all of these and find how the CIA was experimenting, giving LSD to people, trying to create hypnotically controlled assassins. And that's why you get people speculating on Columbine, going, were these kids, you know, hypnotically controlled assassins, or were they given lots of drugs so that they would be mentally unstable and then programmed to do this, like driven over the edge to do this in this particular way? One thing I was going to mention here, and just the kind of very disturbing possibilities as far as the level of planning that went into this, there are some other shootings. We see this recent one at Fort Hood, for example.
Yeah, I was
going to
bring that up. Yeah, Fort Hood.
Yeah. I mean, that's blamed on a U.S. Muslim who's supposedly jumping up on the table and screaming, Allahu Akbar, you know, God is great, and you know, and then doing the shooting. It's like, well, is that a convenient reinforcement to you know, the troop surge in Afghanistan? Perhaps Fort Hood was one of the places that that a lot of troops had been deployed from in the past. So it's like, were they maybe getting tired of being deployed over there and need a little reminder? Another incident, which is very strange, was there was a shooting, I can't remember what year it was, but the guy, I want to say 98, but I could be wrong, Patrick Purdy, P-U-R-D-Y, was the name. He's 25 years old and shot a bunch of kids at a school. But then he has death to the greats. He was not Arab. He was a white guy who just had a really troubled past. And then, but the funny thing is, it's carved into his gun, and then like he had like a bandana or a banner on his jacket or something that said Hezbollah and death to the great Satan, which are of course, you know, quote unquote Muslim extremist terms. But here's not an Arab, but yet somebody had influenced this guy to put this on his, you know, jacket while he's doing this mass crime, which would then make Islam look bad. That to me is, you know, you look at these details and go, who's really orchestrating this stuff?
And I believe, didn't he spell Satan wrong as well, by the way?
Yeah, I did. S-A-T-I-N.
Yeah. That was bizarre. Yeah. But yeah, you wonder who's getting programmed and what are they doing? But we talk about it all the time on our show, the Hegelian dialectic, you know, problem, reaction, solution. It's the same formula they use all the time, and they invent a problem, and they give you the solution, and before you know it, it's like, hey, where'd my rights go? You know, and just think how the world changed after Columbine and how it changed after 9/11. All these things usher in change. And it's like, hey, this isn't the world I remember all of a sudden. I don't know. It's strange how that happens. Yeah, so we've kept you long enough. We'll just wrap up here. We've got about 10 minutes left in the show. But I just want to – you mentioned Fort Hood. What other research are you doing these days? Are you still dedicated to Columbine? Anything else catching your attention?
Yeah, I may put out some a little bit more on Columbine just to help the information keep spreading to new groups. Like I said, the Columbine cause is very much oriented to an already kind of conspiracy-aware people. I might do some stuff that's a little more geared toward just the mainstream and people who, I guess, a more beginning crowd. What seems to be, I mean, and again, it's like we just had this Fort Hood shooting where you can see we have a thread on that, on the Echoes of Columbine board. I'll give out the URL. It's signofthetimes.yuku.com, Y-U-K-U. You can read there, a lot of the early media reports on the Fort Hood shooting was the same thing. They pinned it on one guy now, but a lot of the witnesses said there were two or three suspects, like, being cornered or something.
Yeah,
so
these
again,
witnesses,
what,
by the way,
what,
these witnesses are military people. They're not high school kids. So you can say, oh, they don't know what they're talking about. These are military guys who are witnessing this.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's like, well, even at Columbine, people try to say, well, they're high school kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, but give me a break. I mean,
yeah, when
I
you're
think
in high school, you know what's going
high
on.
School,
yeah.
As I am today, you know, you're gonna know who you're looking
yeah.
at. You're definitely gonna know if it's one or three people. I mean, that's not real hard, you know. So people, I think, who discount it on those grounds are just trying to avoid it. But again, it's like, you know, we're looking at the overall situation here. I look at these terrorist attacks, you know, the Oklahoma City and 9/11 and everything. It's really all gearing up for this massive, I guess, you know, change in the social climate and in the overall political economic climate that's being engineered towards this kind of, you know, greater control. And a lot of people have broken away from it, fortunately, by questioning things like 9/11 and Columbine. But you see now, you know, the new puppet Obama is in there with just the new flavor of the same stuff that's been rolling on for practically 100 years. I think, you know, people now, you know, it seems to me like that conspiracy people and the anti-war people have a lot more in common than they might realize. And I think, you know, they're trying to increase the war in Afghanistan. People have to, because people say, like, what can I do? And, like, what does this matter? You know, why should I know about 9/11 or Columbine or anything? Look at what's going on. I mean, they're sending people over to die in Afghanistan. They're destroying Afghanistan and Iraq, and they're threatening Iran and Syria. We have to organize and oppose this stuff, and we need to take over the economy and make it into something useful for the American people. I mean, they're just taking our lives and our resources and just destroying our future. And that, to me, is the ultimate point of all of this, is that we need to get organized as a nation and, you know, just, you know, maybe there will be different factions and, you know, the more conservative and whatnot, but people need to get organized and take, you know, their country back just in their own way. That to me is the biggest priority right now.
Yeah, because people always say, well, what can we do about it? What can we do about it? And I always like to take the more spiritual approach and, you know, like, be the change you want to see in the world. You know, if you don't like corruption, you don't like deceit, you don't like greed, don't live a corrupt, greedy, deceitful life. And then, like you say, we got to organize, we got to spread the word, we got to tell people, you know, inform, and you win this war with ideas and awareness, and hopefully we can change the tide, you know, raise the consciousness. That's the goal, right?
Yeah, and don't support these. I mean, do research on companies. When you buy stuff, cleaning products, garbage bag, everything, do research on these companies. See who you're giving your money to, because you're really giving money to the enemy. You're giving money to these people who are destroying the world. They're destroying the environment. They're, you know, they're taking a whole generation of us and, you know, sending us over to war. It's horrible, and it can be stopped if we organize sufficiently and say enough is enough.
Well, Evan Long, let me just commend you again for the great work you're doing. And let me tell you, you have an ally right here, and LCS Hockey. Let's see if our my co-host Larry's still there. Larry, you still there?
Yes, I am still here.
An hour and a half later. Now, you're not creeped out by any of this, Larry. You're not scared, right? Larry gets a little freaked out by this kind of talk. But
You know how I am, Mike Dell.
But you're ready to organize and get on board with us, Larry?
Yeah, I mean, eventually the truth has to get out there.
Yeah, that's right. Got to spread the truth. It's all about spreading the truth. Well, Evan Long, hopefully we can do this again on because we've been building up to a 9/11 show. We haven't done it yet. We get a lot of requests, do 9/11. But I thought it'd be good to work our way up to it so people can get a bigger picture of what's going on. And then, because that is the big topic, right, 9/11, that was the big tipping point right there for awareness, I'd say.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe we'll hopefully we can get in touch with you again in the future and do something about that as well. But thanks again for coming on the show. Once again, the movie is The Columbine Cause, and you can find it at thecolumbinecause.tk. And you mentioned also Echoes of Columbine is a great message board. Just Google for that, and you'll find it. Anything else you'd like to plug or mention here?
No, you know, just the main site is evanlong.tk, and like you said, thecolumbinecause.tk. And, you know, people should just spread it among, you know, their more open-minded friends and family members. And, you know, that's really how all this is going to change.
Yeah. Well, Evan, thanks again, and we'll be in touch. Thank you, sir. Appreciate
all right, thanks a lot.
There he goes, Evan Long. Now, how about that, Larry? Did you learn something?
I learned a million things, actually.
Yeah. It's pretty good. Yeah. Huh? That guy knows his stuff.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, he's no joke.
He's got it down to a science.
It's like I have a twin.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm sure he eats, though.
Yeah, probably. But, so thanks again to Evan Long for coming on. And we'll be back on Wednesday night with the usual, like, you know, monkey shine. We'll make it funny and whatnot. We'll do the comedy on Wednesday.
That's where I shine, Mike, though, with, you know, talking about shaving the nuts and Tina Fey and that sort of thing. That's where Larry's really needed.
Yeah, the movies and the TV. But you gotta have the full rounded experience in life. You know, you gotta tackle the big issues as well, Larry.
Yeah, I would say, yeah. But, you know, I'm a little nervous.
A little bit. Yeah, you start looking in, but Evan's done research into other, like you said, other organized shootings like Port Arthur and Fort Hood, and even that Pittsburgh shooting's bizarre. Remember that one, Larry, just a couple months ago?
No.
Even that one has some bizarre points to it about another shooter possibly being involved. And,
I have no idea what you're talking about.
In that aerobic center in Pittsburgh, don't you remember?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know what to think about it.
You know why I remember that? Because they interrupted Big Brother.
Oh, yeah, well, see, there you go.
Yeah.
And that's why our society is failing. All right, Larry, go ahead and wrap it up.
All right, we'll be back again Wednesday night, but we got to thank Evan Long once again. That's thecolumbinecause.tk or evanlong.tk, he said?
Yeah, just Google for Evan Long. You'll find everything.
Yeah.
Need.
And you know, next you know, Wednesday night we'll be back again with you know, the usual nonsense and shenanigans and monkey shines that that we pride ourselves on. But other than that, it was a great show today, Mike Dell. It was a serious show, very serious, very very you know, in depth you know, sort of material. But it was good stuff, and we
maybe just close with the conspiracy theme again.
Yeah, I was going to do that, as a matter of fact. So, yeah, we'll talk to you again Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Until then, pass the gin, governor.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to write. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crying in the streets. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it! My life has value!
I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Thank you very much.